to you for questions, not speeches, questions that you can submit by clicking on that Q&A bar at the bottom of your screen and putting a question. And then at the end, we'll go through some of those questions and answer as many as we can. But first, an overview of the Julian Assange case and related matters that we're going to be discussing today. Julian Assange himself is being prosecuted by the United States under the old Espionage Act passed during World War I for use against spies. And he's the first journalist ever charged under that act. He's charged with conspiring with Chelsea Manning to publish those Iraq war logs, which among many, many thousands of documents contain that video now known as the collateral murder video, showing American troops committing war crimes as they gunned down 10 Iraqi civilians. And you'll see that video a little later as well. In prosecuting Assange for espionage, the Trump administration, though, has done some other heinous thing. They dug very deep and come up with a rather buried and obscure subsection, really, of that Espionage Act to prosecute anyone who simply receives or retains or possesses national defense information, no matter how it may have come into their possession. Matt Taibbi, in the new book entitled In Defense of Julian Assange, makes the point that if the government is allowed to get away with using this tool to successfully prosecute reporters and publishers, well, in very short order, we will have no publishers, no reporters. Shamefully, not all in the US media, or all on the left for that matter, and the civil liberties community even, initially supported Julian Assange as they should have. They have not understood the threat to themselves. They've not understood the threat, more importantly, perhaps, to free press and the democracy that depends upon a free press. Much on the left have been dissuaded from supporting Julian because of one or another of false charges, rumors circulated around him, circulated in some cases by the US government itself. I mean, Hillary Clinton didn't lose the 2016 election because of anything Julian Assange did. She lost it because of what she didn't do. And both women involved in that phony so-called Assange sex scandal, months and months ago, publicly denied that Assange ever assaulted them, clearly stating that their government's charges against him were not true. But what is true, and what should greatly alarm us all, is that just as the Trump administration is today trying to silence reporters questioning his response to the COVID-19 pandemic, Trump has also long been hellbent on a campaign to silence all journalists and publishers who dare to expose the too many to name crimes and corrupt acts of the United States. Crimes such as the multitude of US war crimes in the Middle East disclosed to the public by Julian Assange in WikiLeaks. And you'll hear more about that later as well. And what is also true is that Julian Assange is now facing 175 years in a US prison if he is extradited back to the United States. Meanwhile, Julian is locked away in a jail in England, where his ongoing extradition hearing has made a kangaroo court look good. And locked away in that jail, Assange is a prime target of the coronavirus sweeping the world. Yes, Julian Assange, like hundreds of thousands of others like him, at risk in these jails, should be protected from these deadly environments. And a little later, Professor Malina Abdullah will speak about the plight of this country's prisoners in the COVID-19 infested prisons. On May 13 of last year, Julian Assange, writing to the world from his horrific coronavirus prone British imprisonment, tells us that, and I quote Julian, quote, "I am unbroken," he says, "albeit literally surrounded by murderers. But the days when I could read and speak and organize to defend myself, my ideals, and my people are over until I am free. Everyone else must take my place," he says. "I am defenseless and counting on you and others of good character to save my life. Truth, truth ultimately," he says, "is all we have," close quote. And so, sisters and brothers, the question that confronts us today is this. Will we let Julian Assange's case become that final nail in a coffin of a free and independent press in America? Or will the most almost really unimaginable injustice of his case arouse our justifiable anger as it should and inspire us to fight like hell to save Julian's life as we fight like hell to save freedom of the press in this country? Hell, we already find ourselves living in a post-democratic United States, and without a free press, we're never going to win back that democracy. And so I urge us to keep reaching out to our sisters and brothers as we are doing today, to keep telling them the truth about Julian Assange, to keep urging them to join the growing movement, the growing numbers of people supporting him or fighting to save his life, and even more critically, fighting to save freedom of the press in America, freedom to write and speak and publish the truth. For Julian Assange is right. Truth. Truth ultimately is all we have. And now, to start us off, we're going to see a short video in which you'll see Julian Assange himself, you'll see the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, and you'll hear from one of Julian's wonderful lawyers, Jennifer Robinson. So can we show that video now?
Us with misappropriated secrets is a perversion of what our great Constitution stands for. It ends now.
I will note Director Mike Pompeo, the CIA director.
Robert, there's no audio.
How would we react if Saudi Arabia sought to extradite a British or American journalist to face prosecution in Saudi Arabia for having published information about Saudi Arabia? Already, we're seeing Bolsonaro's Brazil using the case theory that the United States is using against Julian Assange to prosecute American journalist Glenn Greenwald. Who will be next? Julian is now in a high-security prison here in London, where I have to go to visit him. He's asked me to pass on his sincere thanks to all of you and to the supporters that continue to turn up to protests and continue to support the work of the Courage Foundation. Thanks for your work.
Nathan? I'm not muted. I have no idea what's happening.
Nathan is muted right now.
I am not. Can you hear me?
I hear you, Jim.
But Nathan cannot hear me for some reason.
Yeah, I would say go ahead and with the program, Jim.
All right. I just wondered because much of that wonderful video didn't come across with any sound initially. Do you think we should play it again or just proceed?
I think we should play it again. We can certainly play it again.
Let's play it again. We'll work out these glitches, folks.
Okay, thank you for all of your patience. I'm going to play share screen and play again. Stand by.
WikiLeaks walks like a hostile intelligence service and talks like a hostile intelligence service.
After 16 months of litigation, the UN wrongfully detained and should immediately be freed and saved. The UK appealed, and we won the appeal in November. So there's now two rulings at the United Nations level saying that I'm being unlawfully detained in violation of international treaties, which the UK is a party to, and I should be immediately released and compensated.
We have to recognize that we can no longer allow Assange and his colleagues the latitude to use free speech values against us, to give them the space to crush us with misappropriated secrets is a perversion of what our great constitution stands for. It ends now.
I will note Director Mike Pompeo, the CIA director, and then there is his statement that this, i.e. WikiLeaks and its publications, end now.
It's time to call out WikiLeaks for what it really is. A non-state hostile intelligence service, often abetted by state actors like Russia.
How does he propose to conduct this ending? He didn't say, but the CIA is only in the business of collecting information, kidnapping people, and assassinating people.
The case against Julian Assange sets a dangerous precedent for journalists and editors everywhere. Julian now faces 175 years in prison. Publications which revealed evidence of war crimes, torture, and human rights abuse. Julian and WikiLeaks have won numerous awards the world over for this important work. The material was published together with more than 100 media partners around the world, including The Guardian, The New York Times, Der Spiegel, Le Monde, El Pais, and so many others. For now, Julian is the only person who's facing prosecution for publishing this material. But as we've won since 2010, this is a precedent that can and will be used against editors and journalists everywhere. In this case, the United States government is setting up a precedent whereby any journalist or editor anywhere in the world that publishes truthful information in the public interest about the United States could face extradition and prosecution in the United States. What does this say to other countries like China or Russia? How would we react if Saudi Arabia sought to extradite a British or American journalist to face prosecution in Saudi Arabia for having published information about Saudi Arabia? Already, we're seeing Bolsonaro's Brazil using the case theory that the United States is using against Julian Assange to prosecute American journalist Glenn Greenwald. Who will be next? Julian is now in a high security prison here in London where I have to go to visit him. He's asked me to pass on his sincere thanks to all of you and to the supporters that continue to turn up to protest and continue to support the work of the Courage Foundation. Thanks for your work.
All right. It's now my, if I could now have the moment here to introduce our first panelist who's going to introduce some more of these videos. Hi, can folks hear me?
Yes.
Great. Yes, it's my pleasure now to introduce Robert Corsini. Robert Corsini is a longtime documentary filmmaker, a producer, a writer. He's the owner of Videocratic Media, a content development company. And Robert Corsini, I should say, is responsible for filming and editing all of the videos that you'll be seeing from time to time during today's webinar. And that is truly a major, major undertaking. Robert, set up the first video for us, please.
Great. Thank you, Jim. I'm going to give a little bit of a background. First, I want to say it's a great honor and privilege to work with such great minds and committed human rights activists that have come together in support of Julian Assange here today. As a documentarian, my work has always been a hybrid between news, actuality, and filmmaking. But at the foundation of who I am and what I do has always been a commitment to human rights, freedom of the press, and justice. And my initial contact with Julian Assange and the WikiLeaks team came about in 2016 during the production of a feature documentary project on the Armenian genocide and on Armenian genocide denial that was released in the end in 2017 under the title of Architects of Denial. Some may ask, what's the connection between Assange and the Armenian genocide? Well, as it turned out, there is quite a bit of a connection. As I was doing archival research, I came across an obscure video of Assange participating in a human rights forum wherein he turned the subject to genocide, a favorite subject of whistleblowers, since the perpetrators never really want to talk about it. As I was doing archival research, Assange, in the midst of this video, spoke to the issue of state secrets and how the lack of transparency over time is incredibly corrosive to democracy, and how denial of the Armenian genocide is a historic fact and an ongoing problematic political issue today. It took some time, but I was finally able to reach the WikiLeaks team through the late great human rights attorney, Michael Ratner, at the Center for Constitutional Rights. I sent a set of questions for Mr. Assange and a request for an interview, and he accepted. In my interview with Assange, he revealed what few had known outside the WikiLeaks sphere, that much of the information WikiLeaks had obtained came through the US mission in Ankara, Turkey, on a wide range of nefarious subjects. One in particular surrounded how present-day Armenian genocide denial was being used to broker suppression of Kurdish interests in the region in exchange for maintaining Washington's ambiguity over Turkey's role in the Armenian genocide. Why is this relevant to today's conversation? Well, as a filmmaker and journalist, it was clear as day that WikiLeaks is providing an incredibly important function as a resource for truth and transparency in the face of the most egregious state crimes imaginable. Yes, Assange is not only a journalist, but a historian, a philosopher, and a human rights activist. Which brings me to the point of the story. WikiLeaks' release of the Iraq war logs in 2010 and the collateral murder film was made possible by the courageous efforts of US Army analyst Bradley Manning, now Chelsea Manning, and WikiLeaks. The video became the Rodney King beating tape of the Iraq war. And thanks to Assange's efforts as a publisher, the brutal villainy of the US occupation of Iraq was exposed to the world. And it's because of this revelation, Assange has been imprisoned, tortured, and is now facing, some will argue, unlawful extradition to the United States, and why we are here today. Here is an excerpt from Collateral Murder. We're going to do that one more time.
Have individual. that, we have no personnel east of our position. So, you know, free to engage over.
All right, we'll be engaged.
Yes, Nathan, and everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. You know, I just want to say in regards to that video we just saw, I think it's generous to call it collateral murder. It was targeted murder. Journalists, civilians, and in the course of it, at least two children were murdered. Not because some bomb went astray, but because the U.S. government targeted those individuals. Well, now I want to introduce, if I may, our next speaker, Nathan. So do I do that for my little box up here or how?
Yes, go ahead. Just announce her and I'll unmute her.
That's okay. All right. Our next panelist is attorney Stephen Rohde. Now, Mr. Rohde is a civil liberties activist. He's an historian and a writer who, while practicing as a practicing attorney, practiced constitutional law for over 45 years. He is the former chair of the American Civil Liberties Union of Southern California Foundation. He's the author of American Words of Freedom and also the book Freedom of Assembly. Mr. Rohde is a regular contributor as well to the Los Angeles Review of Books. Steve Rohde will be discussing the publications and disclosures by Julian Assange and WikiLeaks that led to the persecution and prosecution of Julian Assange.
Thank you very much, Jim. I've got to tell you and everyone who is participating in this webinar, every time I see the ill-named collateral murder video, it makes me sick to my stomach. Every one of us has just again witnessed photographic evidence of war crimes. And it was only due to the courage of Chelsea Manning and WikiLeaks and Julian Assange that we have that material in the public domain. That is essentially why we have gathered here and why we are defending Julian Assange. I just want to put this in some context of WikiLeaks, of what it did over the years leading to this infamous prosecution. WikiLeaks began publishing in December of 2006. It published a wide scale of information about political scandals and information across the world. And it was in February of 2010 that it issued the first cables and documents that had been provided by Army Private Chelsea Manning. It was in April of 2010 that WikiLeaks released the collateral murder video, a short portion of which you have just seen. And I encourage every one of you to go online to see the entire video, because what time did not permit us to show is that when first responders came to rescue the injured and the dead, those individuals were attacked by the same US Apache helicopters. That was an event that had occurred on July 12, 2007. The world didn't know about those war crimes or the documentary evidence of those war crimes for 3 years. Until the courage of Chelsea Manning and WikiLeaks allowed them to be seen by the entire world. Over 12 citizens overall were killed, two Reuters reporters, not carrying AK-57s, but carrying cameras. WikiLeaks continued to divulge important information in May and June of 2010. And in July to April of 2011, in July of 2010, WikiLeaks published the Afghan war logs, 75,000 of which were obtained from US military documents on the Afghan war, revealing that Pakistani, Iranian, and other foreign supporters for the Taliban's attacks and civilian casualties by coalition forces, far more than had previously been reported by the US military. And they revealed details of the US pursuit of Osama bin Laden. Continuing into 2010, in October, WikiLeaks published the Iraq war logs, 390,000 Army field reports, revealing US war crimes, more than 15,000 previously unreported Iraqi civilian deaths, and the US ignored reports of systematic torture, abuse, rape, and murder by the Iraqi authorities and army. In November, additional documents were released. In April of 2011, WikiLeaks began publishing the Guantanamo files, 779 files revealing US routine violation of the Geneva Conventions in abusing 800 people ranging from the age of 14 to 89 incarcerated in the Guantanamo Bay Detention Center. And in December of 2011, WikiLeaks published the spy files, thousands of materials that expose the industrialization of global mass surveillance. In July of 2012, WikiLeaks published the Syrian files, over 2 million files, lifting the veil on Bashar al-Assad's government. And those revelations continued to be revealed until the arrest of Julian Assange. This is very important information. It's worldwide information that needed to be divulged. Julian Assange was doing his job as a journalist and a publisher in doing so. And I will only cite one example of what at least one courageous US congressman, the late Democratic Representative John Conyers, who chaired the House Judiciary Committee, and he held a hearing on December 16, 2010, on the Espionage Act and WikiLeaks. And this is what Congressman Conyers said, quote, "The repeated calls from members of Congress, the government, journalists, and other experts crying out for criminal prosecutions and other extreme measures caused me some consternation," he said. "Indeed, when everyone in this town is joined together calling for someone's head, it's pretty sure sign that we want to slow down and take a second look." That's what we're here for. I want everyone to know and look for the book on In Defense of Julian Assange, an extraordinary document collecting essays and articles on this very topic, edited by Tariq Ali and Margaret Kunstler. We need to do our job to understand this issue so that we can be prepared to oppose the U.S. government's extradition of Julian Assange, and if regrettably that happens, his defense here in the United States. Freedom of the press is at stake, and that's what we need to care about. That's why we've organized this webinar to further circulate this information. But I beg you to take more a direct interest in his case, and in doing so, to defend freedom of the press. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Steve. Steve Rohde, thank you so much for that. Our next video, before our next panelist, is a video where you will see Noam Chomsky and Daniel Ellsberg, who certainly has the better idea than the rest of us as to what Julian Assange is going through at the moment. You'll see Chomsky and Ellsberg framing, if you will, the significance of the Julian Assange case in terms of freedom of the press. So let's see that video now.
Actually, the first time that there was an effort actually to prior restraint that would have an injunction against the publication of the of anything, but in this case, the Pentagon Papers. He revealed that he had known at that time that Nixon, President Nixon, had impaneled a grand jury that was pursuing the prosecution of New York Times journalists like Niels Sheehan and Hedrick Smith. That was very little known up until quite recently. Most people don't know it yet. And apparently their lawyer at that time had told Goodale that he fully expected them to be indicted. That would have been the first indictment of a journalist. Now, almost half a century later, Julian Assange is now the first to have actually been indicted as a journalist on this case. And that will mean essentially that we won't have a free press. The public will know essentially what the government chooses to tell them, however untrue and however selective and misleading about its own operations. It's hard to call that a democratic republic. And that's where we're on the verge of achieving right now. The Espionage Act has been an abuse of law continuously since my prosecution, been used against a number of other people, in particular by President Obama, and now by President Trump, as many times in 2 years, 3 years, as Obama in 8 years. This new case, it would be hard even for this Supreme Court, I think, to see it as other than a violation of the First Amendment, and yet the prosecution itself, even if it fails, is meant to be and probably would be an effective deterrent to investigative reporting in the national security field. So much depends then on preventing or stopping this extradition or prosecution or conviction of Julian Assange.
Could you speak to, once again, the point about this being a freedom of the press issue?
Well, the concept of journalism and publishing has taken a more expansive form in the digital age. So there are publishers who don't put out a single hard copy page. They do everything digitally. There are journalists who do their work and post the results. This is a case of a person who falls within the category of journalism and publisher in the modern sense, and is being not only silenced, but bitterly punished for carrying out what ought to be the function of journalists and publishers in a free society. And in fact, as I said, journalism scholarship uses his material constantly. So the effort to silence him reminds me of Mussolini's dictatorship. The great journalist, left activist Antonio Gramsci, was sentenced to decades in prison under Mussolini's fascist dictatorship. And the prosecutor at the time of the trial said, we have to make sure this voice is silenced. And the way to silence him was put him in prison. Assange faces that and possibly even worse. If the notion of freedom of press means anything, this is a textbook example of an effort to undermine it.
All right. I'd like to introduce our next panelist now, if I may. Nathan, can I be heard? Can folks hear me?
Yes, you can.
All right, great. All right, great. Our next panelist is Professor Melina Abdullah. Now, Professor Abdullah is an American academic and a civic leader. She is the chair of the Department of Pan-African Studies at Cal State University, LA. Abdullah is also the co-founder of Black Lives Matter here in Los Angeles, and she was one of those featured in the documentary film on mass incarceration in the United States entitled 13. Professor Abdullah is going to address the crisis of imprisonment during this time of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. So I sent an updated bio. I'm no longer chair of Pan-African Studies, although I'm still a professor. I'm completing my sabbatical, my first sabbatical in 18 years, wow. So so that's what I'm doing, but the organizing hasn't slowed down. I'm thankful for this forum and thankful for everybody's interest in what's happening to Julian Assange. However, I also think that it's hugely important as we talk about Assange and the targeting of Assange, his incarceration, his possible extradition, what it would mean for him to be incarcerated in the United States. It's also important that we understand that even though he's been targeted and even though he has, been imprisoned for political reasons, that he's not the only one. And he also bears some degree of privilege. I know everybody's going, what privilege could he have? But the way in which even this forum is being forged around him is something that doesn't happen for people like Dr. Mutulu Shakur or Imam Jamal Alameen, also known as H.Rep Brown, or Mumia Abu Jamal. And so it's important as we talk about Julian Assange and his possible status as someone who may be incarcerated in U.S. prisons, that we think about the conditions of the prisons and think about Black people in particular who are the plurality of the imprisoned population. Although as we look at the data, we also know that Black people are imprisoned largely because of their targeting, not because we are more likely to commit crime. So here in Los Angeles, data just came out around the targeting of Black motorists and pedestrians by LAPD, the degree to which we're searched by LAPD. So Black people are pulled over at 5 times our population share. We're searched at 3 times the rate of everyone else, even though we're less likely to have contraband or have committed any crime. And then we also know that there's systems like these databases where Black people are being entered into databases falsely, and then that kind of those enhancements. So we're entered into databases and labeled as gang members and then charged with enhancements which leave us in prison for longer periods of time. And so it's important that we understand these systems. We also need to understand that what people are telling us inside of prisons are true. So almost immediately, I'm just gonna share a story because I know I only have, I think, probably 4 minutes left, but I wanna share a quick story. Many folks know that Black Lives Matter organizes around state-sanctioned violence against Black people. And there's a relationship between over-criminalization and mass incarceration, right? So of course, the over-policing of Black people leads to the mass incarceration of Black people. And so many times as we're dealing with families of those who've been killed or targeted by police violence, we're also dealing with mass incarceration within those same families. So the partner of a brother named Quentin Thomas, who was killed while inside Men's Central Jail, his partner called almost immediately when the coronavirus pandemic hit because her father is incarcerated. And within those prisons, what was going around was that the coronavirus was hitting the prison like wildfire. And we began to share these stories with media, but no one would believe us. It took months. And just now, mass media is beginning to catch up on the fact that what inmates, what those who were incarcerated were telling us was absolutely true. So now in places like Terminal Island, we have 700 cases of coronavirus. We have deaths at places like Rikers Island and Lompoc. And so it's really important that we think about what's happening in prisons, that prison labor is being required to make PPE, but prisoners are not allowed to have protective equipment. And prison guards are using this moment to really terrorize prisoners. There's stories about prison guards coming and coughing in the faces of prisoners. We have a sheriff in LA County, Villanueva, lying, saying that prisoners are trying to infect themselves with coronavirus when video evidence shows us that it's actually the prison guards, the sheriff's department that's doing that. So anyway, I don't want to belabor too much, but I want to lift up that as we fight for justice for Julian Assange, it's important that we don't forget the folks who are currently in prison. So if I can, I just wanna share my screen because I have some resources for you. We want you to take action. So I never wanna have 100 people assembled and not give you something to do. We need to be demanding the release of prisoners. There's been two different approaches that locales have taken. In San Francisco, we have a progressive district attorney in Chesa Boudin who has reduced the jail population by 50% since January in anticipation of the coronavirus pandemic. In Los Angeles, we have a district attorney, Jackie Lacey, who continues to prosecute people for low-level crimes and keep them incarcerated. We also have an approach by the Trump regime that when we talk about imprisonment, really has kind of doubled down on the Black, brown, and poor people who are incarcerated while releasing people like Paul Manafort. If you think that's wrong, we need you to take action. We need you to demand the release of prisoners. And there's several websites that you can go to. We wanna begin by releasing our aging prison population. All the data shows that once incarcerated people or formerly incarcerated people reach the age of about 60, there's almost no chance that they will reoffend. And so let's release those folks. So you can go to rapcampaign.com for that. We can release our political prisoners. And so Assange would be one of the political prisoners, but let's not forget our Black political prisoners. So please join the Jericho movement for that. We also want to release our youth who are incarcerated. Young people shouldn't be incarcerated, period. Youth Justice Coalition can be tapped into to help with that. Finally, there were three folks that I was thinking of in particular. I mentioned H. Rapp Brown. I didn't get a chance to write down his website, but I'll drop it in the Q&A. I think it's whathappenedtorapp.com. Free Mumia Abu-Jamal, and then you can sign a petition to release Dr. Mutulu Shakur. Finally, as we were talking about Assange and the courage that he had, someone who kind of haunts me almost for the last 6 years steadily is a brother named Ramsey Orta. And I know most of you may have not even heard of his name, but Ramsey Orta was the young Afro-Puerto Rican brother who filmed the murder of Eric Garner. Almost immediately after he released that video, he was snatched up and incarcerated and has been in and out of solitary confinement ever since. In late April, we found out that Brother Ramsey is sick. He's in an infirmary. They think it may be coronavirus. We don't have confirmation of that. But we absolutely need to rally around Ramsey Orta and give him our support. Prison guards have been said to have threatened him and said he will never be released. His scheduled release date is in July 2020. There's no reason they can't let him out now. But prison guards are now telling him that he will never be released. These are the conditions that we're looking at in American prisons and jails. And so if you care about Assange, we want to challenge you to care about all the others who are incarcerated, especially for political reasons, but also to think critically about whether or not we need to be caging people for things that need not require incarceration. How do we put money in the things that actually keep communities safe and work towards a plan of decarceration? So we want to invite you to not just listen and take in information, but take action. And again, I'm very thankful to have been included in this conversation.
Well, and we are thrilled that you were included. We wanted you very much to talk about the broader issue. And in fact, perhaps near the end, we can put up on the screen again the some of those websites so that people will know it, because we want this whole webinar to be an action-oriented webinar on behalf of the brothers and sisters that you mentioned, but also and Julian Assange as well. And in fact, later we'll hear from Nathan Fuller, and he will tell us the ways in which the audience, those listening now, can take that kind of active role that Professor Abdullah, you've just urged us to do, quite rightfully so. I thank you. Thank you for that. Our next video is again of Noam Chomsky and Daniel Ellsberg, both of whom visited Assange while he was in the Ecuadorian prison. And here you're going to see them discussing Julian Assange's horrid prison conditions pending the attempt of the United States to have him extradited back to the U.S. So let's see that video now, please.
From the UK to the United States coming up in February. Could you frame that?
Assange's current situation, according to the few people who've been able to see him, is severe. Deterioration, physical, cognitive, the result of extremely harsh, brutal punishment. And in fact, people have seen him say his life may be in danger from these harsh, brutal conditions. His crime, technically, is not paying bail. Okay, so you pay $50, maybe you spend a night in jail. For this crime, he's been placed in a high security prison This is after all he's endured already and treated like one of the world's dangerous terrorists. And meanwhile, facing the constant threat of extradition to the United States, which can take savage retribution for what was in fact a service to the citizens of the United States. That's a brutal situation to try to endure.
There is a separate issue, though, of the issue of how he's being held pending extradition or while he waits. And that could be a matter of years. Nils Meltzer, the UN Rapporteur for Torture, has not only called the conditions under which he's being held in solitary confinement in a maximum security prison where three people have died unnecessarily, it would seem, in the last year. Conditions in this prison, very, very, very problematic. There is no excuse for him being in a security prison at all, let alone under conditions of virtual isolation on this, which 60 doctors have now appealed to the British government and to the Australian government, saying that this threatens his life, his mental stability, and his life right now. There's a lot of outrages going on in this world every hour of the day and all around the world, some larger, some smaller. The attempt to prosecute in America Julian Assange as a journalist is one of those outrages, and the effort to have him extradited for that purpose is outrage. But a second separate condition is that the conditions under which he's being held, which threaten his emotional, mental, psychological, and physical health, are a separate outrage that should be ended immediately. Many people have called for him to be, for the extradition processes to be dropped, for him to be freed initially. I certainly support that. That isn't going to happen by any indication. England is as determined to stop this exposure of imperial projects, on many of which it's a collaborator with the US. They're as anxious to do that as the American government. And this extradition problem is going to go on for a long time.
All right. Thank you for that. And I now get the chance to, happily so, to introduce our next panelist. Our next panelist is Professor Sharon Kyle. Now, Professor Kyle is a law professor and the former president of the People's College of Law here in Los Angeles. She is a board member of the American Civil Liberties Union of Southern California. Sharon Kyle is also the publisher of the marvelous LA Progressive, a daily online publication that focuses on social justice issues. And if you're not already a subscriber to that publication, you don't know what you're missing. Professor Sharon Kyle is going to be addressing issues of freedom of the press in the age of the internet. Sharon.
Hi there. Hi, Jim. It's really a pleasure to be here with all of these wonderful speakers and people that think deeply about these issues. And I've been asked to talk about freedom of the press and journalism. First, I want to thank Melina Abdullah for bringing to the fore this issue of looking at this in a holistic way. I've talked about this before, how we need to have a systems way of viewing what is happening in this country as it transitions from, some would argue, and I'm one of them, that we've never really had democracy, but certainly we are on the outer rims of what might become this political philosophy called fascism, where we have people who are exalting the nation over race and the individual rights of individuals, and they stand for a centralized autocratic government headed by a dictatorial leader. The reason that we have the press in the Constitution, since it's actually the only enterprise that is protected in the Constitution, the reason that we have that is to stave off these interests who are only concerned about their own political power. Lonnie Winier and Gerald Torres wrote a fabulous book called The Coal Miner's Canary, Enlisting Race, Resisting Power, and Transforming Democracy. And they liken the situation with Blacks and Browns in this country to that of the canaries in the coal mine. They say that like the canaries that alerted miners to a poisonous atmosphere, issues of race point to underlying problems in society. Melina talked about how the prisoners have been yelling about the problems that they were encountering associated with COVID-19, and they were not listened to. So I just want to go back a little bit to 1971, when Lewis Powell, who was a Supreme Court justice, he put out a memo, a confidential memo, entitled Attack on American Free Enterprise. And in his mind, Lewis Powell believed that the outcomes of the civil rights movement, the women's movement, the Vietnam protests, what was happening in many progressives' minds is that we were expanding our democracies to include more of the people in the United States, as it should always have included. But in Lewis Powell's mind, this was an attack on the American free enterprise. And he laid out a very lengthy memo. And in that memo, he talks about the media. And he suggests to the chairman of the Chamber, U.S. Chamber of Commerce, he suggested that every available means should be employed to challenge and refute unfair attacks. And he calls these unfair attacks, these attacks on the American free enterprise system, and to present an affirmative case for the way that he thinks. And this was sort of the birth of the far right movement. That was almost 50 years ago. And if you look at the Powell memo and look at what has occurred in this country over the past 50 years, you'll see that as the memo was laid out, we've seen attacks on our civil liberties. I'm going to talk about the First Amendment and how in the Constitution it says that Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. But there are a variety of ways that that freedom can be stymied. I'm going to talk right now about something that we generally don't hear very much about, and that is the working together of the corporatists and those who have power within the and the social media. So the social media moguls. Social media moguls have the power to chill the speech of smaller outlets, any outlet that is not a corporate-driven media outlet is in extreme jeopardy when you have the power of the corporations and the social media moguls changing algorithms. And that's where we are today. You know, the WikiLeaks, what Assange did with WikiLeaks is he made available information that the average small outlet would never have had access to. And for that, for that reason, he now faces potential extradition in 175 years, perhaps 175 years behind bars. But the ACLU has said that for the first time in the history of this country, the government has brought criminal charges against a publisher for the publication of truthful information. So what does that do to the rest of the journalism realm, to small operations? And for the most part, all progressive media is small. Corporate media currently has the power, and they provide a very skewed view of what's happening. For example, as Melina just talked about what's happening in the prisons, you're not going to get that information only just now, but it's been going on for a couple of months. So even though Congress shall make no law respecting or abridging the freedom of speech, the way that our freedoms are abridged is by changing algorithms, is by establishing dangerous precedents as they are attempting to do right now with the attempted extradition of Julian Assange. And so what we can do about that, although this presentation that we're doing here is not to provide simple answers, but to get people to understand that one of the core freedoms, the foundation of what this country was founded on, is being chipped away. And if what happens to Julian Assange, if it plays out in the way that Pompeo and the powers that be want it to play out, we will have lost one of the key freedoms that keep this country a democracy, if you can call it that. So that's all I'll say on that issue, and I'll end with that.
Well, thank you, Sharon Kyle. Thank you so much. And again, thank you, and thank Dick Price, the two of you, for keeping that LA Progressive on our screens every day. As I say, friends, if somehow you're not a part of that yet, I don't know what to say. It's just wonderful writing, wonderful thinking, wonderful action. Check it out, the LA Progressive. And now, Robert Corsini, would you help me out here on what the next video is going to be? Maybe set it up for us?
Yes, Jim. We're going to skip this one. So just go ahead and introduce Vincent. And we'll be on track.
All right. I wondered about that. Thank you. All right. And that is now my privilege to introduce our next panelist then. That's Vincent DiStefano. Now, Vincent DiStefano is a human rights activist. He's the recipient of Amnesty International's 2019 Urgent Action Letter Writer of the Year Award. Mr. DiStefano will address the serious threats to freedom of the press presented by the prosecution of Julian Assange. Vincent.
Thank you very much, Jim. And I want to thank all the panelists. I'm honored to be with here with such stellar human rights activists and intellectuals. I would also add one more to the list that Dr. Abdullah talked about, and that would be Leonard Peltier for people that are in prison. Now, the reason Julian Assange prosecution should be of grave concern to all of us, regardless of our political affiliation, is because it is the very first time in US history that a journalist or a publisher is being prosecuted for simply telling the truth. In a free and open society, that's not just the right of journalists, it must be their duty and their highest calling. The successful prosecution of Julian Assange on these charges is therefore an existential threat to the very foundation of our freedom of the press. That is because in addition to criminalizing publications, something that's never been done before, this goes much, much further by literally criminalizing the very activities that are required for investigative journalism. That represents a direct assault on the First Amendment, because the type of journalist activities that Trump is seeking to criminalize are the very activities that the founding fathers had in mind when they crafted the First Amendment. A free and open press speaking truth to power. Now, the Obama administration used the 1917 Espionage Act against more individuals than all previous administrations combined. In fact, since 9/11, there has been a nonstop wholesale war on whistleblowers by all administrations. Think of these names: Chelsea Manning, John Kiriakou, Jeffrey Sterling, Thomas Drake, Edward Snowden, to name but a few of the courageous individuals who risked and then ultimately lost their freedom and livelihoods. Now, did they lose those things for being spies or working with a foreign government or revealing nuclear launch codes? No. Each of these individuals was persecuted for telling the inconvenient truths about what the US government did in our names and on our dime. They all, one way or another, revealed evidence of war crimes or torture or malfeasance or embarrassing facts that the US government did not want its citizens or the rest of the world to know about. However, even the Obama administration chose not to litigate as the Trump administration is doing because of what they perceived as the New York Times problem. They clearly understood that a successful prosecution on the terms now before the court would set a legal precedent allowing any news publisher or journalist to be jailed for simply doing their job. Ultimately, the New York Times, no friend to Julian Assange, stated after the filing of these charges that they now understand the jeopardy that they and all other media outlets will face if this case prevails in a court of law. The Washington Post went further and more succinctly. It will criminalize investigative journalism. And finally, CNN said, what is at stake here is the case of journalism as we know it. Now, that is because of how the charges have been crafted by the Trump administration. Their design, as Jim had said early, literally to make all classified documents radioactive, toxic to come into contact in any manner. Now, this great book, In Defense of Julian Assange by Margaret Kunstler and Tariq Ali, which I recommend for everyone, in it, Matt Taibbi wrote, virtually every reporter who's ever done national security reporting has at some point or another looked at, been told, or actually received copies of national defense information they were not entitled to receive. Anyone who covers the military, intelligence community, or certain congressional committees will eventually stumble into this terrain sooner or later. Now, Mike Pompeo, no friend to civil liberties, in his very first public speech as CIA director was very clear about where this administration stands. He stated, we have to recognize we can no longer allow Assange and his colleagues the latitude to use free speech values against us to give them the space to crush us with misappropriated secrets is a perversion of what our great Constitution stands for. But what Mike Pompeo said is actually a perversion, because he clearly is not talking about values, but he is directly attacking the very concept of free speech and the freedom of the press. What Pompeo is calling for is an end to freedom of speech and press for anyone who disagrees with him or the Trump administration. And Jeffrey Robinson, who's represented Assange in the past, said there's no doubt that the Trump administration was prepared to pursue Assange to the ends of the earth because it is determined to create precedents that will shackle investigative journalism. He said this is about deterrence, plain and simple. More horrifying than that, if the Trump administration prevails here, it will set a precedent for the rest of the world as well. Robinson then went on to address that international threat by stating, America, right or wrong, is seen as a beacon of free speech, and our First Amendment is a phenomenal example to the world. This at a time when all over the planet, autocratic governments are trying to jail or silence journalists. It would be a shame, he said, if the U.S. were to abandon its principles when we need them most. Well, unfortunately, that is exactly what the Trump administration is doing with this prosecution against their perceived enemies of the people, our Fourth Estate. I will close with Julian's own words in a direct response to Pompeo's bombast. When the director of the CIA, an unelected public servant, publicly demonizes a publisher, it is a dagger aimed at America's constitutional right to receive honest information about their government. What the head of the CIA is calling for would limit not only the ability of the people to speak and to publish freely, it would also limit the ability of people to read and understand information, because it is that climate of public debate which creates a check on centralized government structure from becoming authoritarian. It is a right from that perspective for all people, not just the publisher. And that is why the prosecution of Julian Assange should matter to all of us, because it is our right to know that is on trial, not Julian. We all stand in the docket with Julian in that glass box right now, as does our freedom of speech. Thank you.
Vincent, is the final. Thank you so much, my friend, for that. Thank you so much for that. And now it's my pleasure to introduce a longtime colleague, Professor Marjorie Cohn, who is Professor Emerita at Thomas Jefferson School of Law. Marjorie is a former national president of the National Lawyers Guild, I'm proud to say. She is a criminal defense attorney and legal scholar who lectures really all around the world about human rights, and foreign policy, and conflicts between the two. Some of her books include The United States and Torture, Cameras in the Courtroom, and Drones and Targeted Killing. And her columns regularly appear on Truthout, HuffPost, Salon, and other online publications. Today, Professor Cohn will be addressing the legality, or lack thereof, of the United States seeking to extradite Julian Assange back to the US under the United States extradition treaty with England. Marjorie?
Thank you so much, Jim, and I'm honored to be part of this program that is dealing with such critical issues, and particularly what Julian Assange has done and the threat that it poses to freedom of the press. The US-UK extradition treaty from 2003 states that extradition shall not be granted if the offense for which the extradition is requested is a political offense. And so the UK would determine whether or not the request by the United States to extradite Assange was politically motivated. And although there's no clear definition of political offense, it routinely includes treason, sedition, and espionage, and offenses directed against state power. We're talking about this, the last two, espionage, which is alleged espionage, and offenses directed at state power. As many people, including Steve Rohde, have pointed out, what Julian Assange did, as many other media outlets did, was to expose U.S. war crimes. And in fact, just the collateral murder video alone has evidence, clear evidence, of three different violations of the Geneva Conventions, which constitute war crimes. Moreover, the revelations that WikiLeaks published about the Iraq war, the Iraq war logs, in addition to the collateral murder video, actually saved lives, because Obama wanted to pull troops out of Iraq, U.S. troops, and he was negotiating an agreement with the Iraqi government, which would have given U.S. troops immunity from civil and criminal liability for any wrongs that they committed in Iraq. And after the Iraqi government saw what WikiLeaks had exposed about U.S. war crimes in Iraq, they refused to grant that immunity, and in fact, lives were saved. Now, the political nature of Assange's extradition process to the United States has been was described by Balthasar Garzón, who is the coordinator of Assange's legal team, and he said, if the country that required extradition were not the United States, it's absolutely certain that the issue of extradition would not even have been considered in court. Extradition against Julian Assange has a clear political focus, and we will be able to prove it without any reasonable doubt. Moreover, the extradition of Assange to the United States would violate the Convention Against Torture and other cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment. That's a treaty the U.S. is party to, making it part of U.S. law under the Supremacy Clause. The Convention Against Torture has a provision called non-refoulement, and that forbids extradition to a country where there are substantial grounds to believe that a person would be in danger of being tortured. When she was arrested in 2010, Chelsea Manning was held in solitary confinement for 23 hours a day for 11 months. She was forced to stand nude during daily inspections, and former UN Special Rapporteur said that her treatment was cruel, inhuman, or degrading, and possibly torture if he were allowed access to the information. And so it is likely that if extradited to the United States, Assange would face a similar fate and be subjected to torture. Moreover, a country has a duty to refuse extradition when it would violate fundamental rights, such as the right to be free from torture and cruel treatment. The Johannesburg Principles of National Security, Freedom of Expression, and Access to Information say that no person may be punished on national security grounds for disclosure of information in the public interest if the public interest in knowing the information outweighs the harm from the disclosure. Last year, UN Special Rapporteur Niles Melser declared that Assange was exhibiting signs of prolonged exposure to psychological torture, because during his years of isolation in the Ecuadorian embassy, the UK government refused to give him permission to go to a hospital for treatment. His lawyers asked the judge in the extradition proceeding, Judge Vanessa Bareitster, to release him and grant bail and release him because he was so vulnerable, because of his health conditions, to getting the coronavirus. And she ruled in March, on March the 25th, that Julian Assange was a flight risk, couldn't be trusted to be released. And she repeated hearsay, saying that he preferred suicide to extradition. And in what appeared to be tipping her hand about what her decision will ultimately be, said that there was a high risk of extradition. So here's the judge, who's supposed to be impartial, and much of the hearing hasn't even taken place yet, and she's saying, oh, he has a high risk of extradition. For 23 hours a day, Assange is held in solitary confinement. And for that other hour, he is with 40 other inmates in very close quarters, in an exercise space. So his increased risk for the virus comes from ongoing psychological torture, as documented by the UN Special Rapporteur, a history of medical neglect, fragile health, and chronic lung disease. As Glenn Greenwald in The Intercept wrote, Assange faces no charges of any kind other than the attempt to extradite him by the US government for those 2010 publications. There are no charges pending against him in Sweden, nor does the prosecution have anything to do with WikiLeaks publications during the 2016 election. The indictment pertains solely to those widely celebrated 2010 disclosures that revealed rampant war crimes, systemic corruption, and official deceit by numerous governments around the world. Assange's extradition hearing will continue on September 7th. It is set for three additional weeks. And after Judge Bereitzer makes her ruling, assuming that she upholds the extradition and allows Trump to extradite Julian Assange to the United States, there will be an automatic appeal of her decision to the magistrate court and then the UK High Court, the Court of Appeals, and the European Court of Human Rights. And I want to close with a quote from UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, who said, "Now more than ever, governments should release every person detained without sufficient legal basis, including political prisoners and others detained simply for expressing critical or dissenting views." Thank you.
Marjorie Cohn, Professor Cohn, thank you for that really enlightening and terrific presentation. Marjorie, thank you so much. Our next video clip, and correct me if I'm wrong, Robert, is about the importance of whistleblowers in the United States. And it's a clip, again, I believe, from Daniel Ellsberg himself. Am I right, Robert? Please play that.
Julian Assange set up WikiLeaks in order to facilitate whistleblowers, to facilitate, publish, really, information that governments were wrongly withholding from their public, and it was needed by the public, and he did so. I actually stood at his side in a press conference in 2010 when he revealed the so-called Iraq war logs. Thousands of pages we know now were supplied by Chelsea Manning about many illegalities, including torture, going right up to the then current administration, Barack Obama. So a number of governments, Britain, which was a very cooperative partner in this coalition of the willing in aggression against Iraq, it revealed crimes, actually. It wasn't high enough level in the decision-making to reveal how we got into Iraq, but what we were doing when we were there, which involved death squads, assassinations, and torture, widespread torture, was something that our government did not know, want known. It was a clear revelation of war crimes. And so it was kept classified.
All right. Well, I thank you for that, Robert, and Daniel Ellsberg for that. Now we introduce our final panelist, after which I think there's still one more video, and then we're going to open up to try to answer some of the many, many questions that you, our listeners, have been sending in, and we appreciate that. But our final panelist is Nathan Fuller. Now, Nathan Fuller is the director of the Courage Foundation in New York City. And the Courage Foundation supports whistleblowers and other journalistic sources who often risk life and or liberty to make significant contributions to the historical record. Mr. Fuller is also the executive director of the national and newly formed Committee in Defense of Julian Assange and Civil Liberties. Nathan Fuller is going to speak to us about the ways that we can defend Julian and freedom of the press and the civil liberties of us all. Nathan Fuller, please.
Thanks, Jim. So as Jim said, Courage is an international whistleblower support group who was started in the wake of Chelsea Manning's 35-year sentence back in August of 2013 and Edward Snowden's escape to Moscow, when we decided that we really ought to prepare for the next whistleblowers with legal teams and resources at the ready, but also to build support for whistleblowing more generally, just in general. So we've raised funds for and advocate for individuals on each part of the information supply chain, from a journalist source to a reporter to the publisher, now with Julian Assange. And in the past, we've led campaign efforts on behalf of Snowden and Hammond, and we successfully defeated the extradition request for UK citizen Lowry Love. He was threatened extradition to the United States. But so in the last few years, we've turned our efforts toward the defense of Julian Assange, not just because he personally needs assistance defending himself against the limitless resources of the US government, which in this case also now includes the compliant UK and Ecuadorian governments, but because the indictment against him is clearly an attempt at something much larger, the criminalization of the acquiring, possessing, and then the publication of information that's so clearly in the public interest. So now we run Assange's official defense site. That's at defend.wikileaks.org. That's where you can find an ongoing live blog of developments in the case, resources like legal documents and fact sheets, videos of past events. And that's where you can donate to the legal team and to keep Courage going. I personally attended the first week of Assange's hearing in February in London, and you can find my reporting on those proceedings there as well. So that's so as far as how to get involved beyond that, though, there are support groups demonstrating for Assange in so many different countries. They're all across Europe and Australia. So in addition to these international efforts, it's likely that you can probably find a group near you. If you're in the UK, supporters should be following the Don't Extradite Assange campaign. They're at don'textraditeassange.com. They hold events in London, lead the UK campaign. And then at don'textraditeassange.com/MP, you can automatically write to your representative expressing your support for Assange, but also getting your MP to pledge their support or at least comment on the case and agree to pass on concerns that you have as one of their constituents to the Home Secretary. In the US now, as you mentioned, Jim, we're organizing this new organization, the US Committee to Defend Julian Assange and Civil Liberties, and it's going to have different regional branches. This LA group, all of you guys have done such a good job being organized and motivated as a region, putting together this event. And I just want to say I really appreciate all the work that you've done so far and being a part of this event and group. We're also starting with a really substantial New York City branch. It includes activists who have been holding vigils for Assange in central Manhattan every single week for years now. So we'd like to build that up to organize support for Assange, for the freedom of the press in general, across the United States. This is, of course, an international case with implications for journalists everywhere. And it is really worth emphasizing this is a serious example of the US as world police, reaching far beyond its own borders, prosecuting an Australian publisher working in Europe for publishing documents that embarrass the United States. Prosecutors have already indicated that because Assange is not a US citizen, he shouldn't receive First Amendment protections. So the US is effectively saying the First Amendment is for US citizens, but the Espionage Act can be used anywhere in the world. It's for anyone. And so it's time US citizens spoke up about that. So follow Courage on social media. We're at Courage Found, but also stay tuned at defend.wikileaks.org. That's where we're going to announce the website launch for this new organization. And you can email us courage.contact@couragefound.org for now, if you want to get involved. And so we really encourage increasing the support and building up solid support across the United States as we look to keep Julian Assange from coming here.
Well, Nathan Fuller, thank you so much. And you thanked our LA group, and they are a wonderful group. But and we've just gotten to know you over, I think, it's the last 6 months. And you're awesome, my friend. I mean, what you've been doing and what's already been done on this issue and how much we in LA have depended upon you as we put our own group together and put things like this webinar together. I want you to know we fully appreciate them, and we thank you very much for that. Before our Q&A, we do have, I believe, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, Robert, a last video where Daniel Ellsberg, again, is defending Julian Assange as a journalist. Is that correct? If so, please play it.
That Julian Assange is a journalist. He's a publisher, essentially on the same level as the New York Times or anybody else. His methods are different in the digital era, essentially. His interest in investigative reporting that results in classified leaks is shared by the New York Times, but he's much more tenacious and aggressive in very useful work. Now, many people on the left and progressive people in general are outraged at Julian Assange for his journalism in 2016 during the campaign. After all, Donald Trump thanked him for that, and with reason, and regarded it as helpful to his campaign, along with a number of other things that were helpful to his campaign. I think that's right, and that, of course, outraged many people. And the effects of it, to the extent that it helped Donald Trump, are deplorable, I would say, as we've seen for the last 3 years. But to say that it's not journalism is like saying that Fox News is not journalism. You can call it propaganda with reason. You can call it a government spokesperson, you know, or of Trump entirely, or Breitbart News. But they are, in my opinion, to the freedoms and protection of the First Amendment as journalists. To say that it's not journalism is ridiculous and dangerous. To say that it's journalism that's helpful to opposing political views or something was true in 2016. For these same leftists and progressives, it was not true when I stood by him in 2010. That's what he's indicted for. The channels he gave to Chelsea Manning, then Bradley Manning at that time, were, I think, journalism at its best.
All right. Well, now we've been getting so many, and I'm so pleased with this, we've been getting dozens and dozens of questions coming in from you, our viewers. And we're going to try to answer as many of those questions as we reasonably can today. Nathan, why aren't I seeing the questions?
Can you click Q&A and
I did.
Open or answered?
Open. Ah, here we go. All right. So that's fine. Let's see. Well, I wonder, Todd Pierce put this forward. He said, at the appropriate time, and maybe that's now, would anyone wish to respond to my suggestion that those British courts jurists ready to turn Julian over to the US for an illegal prosecution due to lacking jurisdiction and no fair trial rights have themselves become complicit in the US war crimes, which Julian revealed? I wonder, Marjorie, what do you think about that?
Well, I think it's clear that Tony Blair was George W. Bush's right-hand man or left-hand man or his partner in crime in prosecuting the Iraq War. And there were extensive hearings in the UK accusing Tony Blair of war crimes. So it's certainly the case that these revelations, particularly about the Iraq War, that Julian Assange's journalism led to, also implicates and embarrasses the UK government. And that, of course, is very likely not lost on the judge who will be making the extradition decision.
All right. Thank you for that. One of the attendees asked this question. Will Julian Assange ever provide proof of who provided him the Hillary Clinton emails? Julian said it was not the Russians, and the questioner says, I believe him. The people would like some answers to this. Anyone care to address that?
This was a result of a Freedom of Information Act request by an organization that was not WikiLeaks. And this is explained in the book that has been referred to in great detail.
All right. Maybe a simple question, an important one. I've wondered it myself. I guess this is to you, Robert, to answer for us. But Dr. Vicky Riddell asks, how did you obtain the targeted murder video, collateral murder?
Well, it is available. You have to poke around on the internet. It's been taken down from multiple sites, but you can get a hold of it and download it yourself. But it's not obvious. You're not going to be able to find it automatically on YouTube. You just have to poke around and get a hold of it. I'd be happy to share it with anyone who wants it. So, there are restrictions on it because you are dealing with material that is technically, you know, still in a way classified. So in a way, by accessing it, you're implicating yourself in something that may not.
Yes, and I understand it. Correct me if I'm wrong, Nathan, but this webinar that we're just in the process of wrapping up has been recorded, and it will be available. So one place that people will be able to get at least a portion of the collateral murder video is through that, because we've made it available to the to that. And Robert, I know for a fact that you have more of that. It's a longer video than
it's about 40 minutes long.
Yeah, it's a longer video. And I leave it to you, Robert. I don't want to put you on the spot on the air as it is, but perhaps you'll want to make that available to people who want to write to you at some point.
Yeah, but if you put it up on your YouTube page, you will get a strike from YouTube and they potentially could shut you down.
So that's
a concern in dealing with that video. And I had a warning when I posted on my YouTube page. So that's immediately a scary thought when you realize all the subjects that we're talking about, how easy it is still to shut down this critical information. Yeah. So
Nathan, your thought on this?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, and it's a real serious problem that it's being censored from YouTube and other outlets right now, because this is obviously an incredibly, you know, this is truthful information in the public interest, and it's clearly incredibly important that the public sees it. This is what the U.S. government is doing with our tax dollars behind our backs, and this is what they don't want you to see. It's really incredible to see that footage from the soldier's point of view, something we really never get to see otherwise. And so Chelsea Manning and Assange provided an incredible window and an incredible point of view we could never see otherwise. But it's also worth just noting how important this was to Reuters. Two Reuters journalists were killed in that video, as has been discussed, but Reuters, the news organization, then knew that two of their journalists had been killed. They thought that it might have happened in this incident and tried to get information about it. They tried to get this video themselves and were repeatedly stonewalled by the US government. It was only through the outside normal channels actions of Assange and Manning that provided Reuters with information about the killing of their own innocent journalists.
I want to add also, and I just discovered this when I went through it just earlier today or yesterday, is that, well, first, there is the initial murder, which is horrible. And then, as we've discussed before, then the follow-up when they come to gather the wounded, then the helicopters attack the people who come and they destroy everything in sight. And then when the soldier, the military units show up, they run their tanks over people's bodies. I'm sorry? Did I hear a question?
Oh, I realized that.
And then let me finish. What then happens, and this is the end of the tape I didn't even see, then they fired two Hellfire missiles into the building.
Yeah, just
and I never saw, I don't know, because I guess I was preoccupied with the horror of it all, but yeah. the Hellfire missiles then obliterate the entire block.
That's so, why I said it's hardly collateral. It's deliberate. It's not part of some war on anything. Yeah,
direct as they can get.
Yeah, Jim, if I may, there's one other thing to put this into context, and that is that the U.S. government kept this video secret for almost 3 years. The individuals that were in those helicopters were awarded medals, but the person who revealed these three war crimes that Professor Cohen correctly outlined, they received medals. Chelsea Manning was in solitary confinement repeatedly.
So I'd like to say something here about the video, the video being embedded in this overall recording. We should be able to post that and see if it's going to get the same treatment that the YouTube video, which was isolated and it was just the collateral murder video. So if it's embedded within this, we might stand a better chance at keeping it. But I think that
that's true.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that anyone that's participating in this share this information. You know, you always hear people say like and share. One of the reasons that we're trying to get people to like and share is not simply to get the message out. That's true. That is one of the reasons. But there's another reason. And that is that when you like and share, you add to the credibility of the information that is being shared. And then that enables a greater audience to have access to it. So if something just has one like or one share, it doesn't rise up. And people that have an IT background understand this. Most of us don't understand it, but having that information is helpful in getting the word out.
Yeah, and Sharon, Kyle, and you've not paid me for this. We've not rearranged this. But would you mind telling people again how they go about becoming someone who every day, as I am, sees your wonderful and Dick Price's wonderful LA progressive? Yeah, and you don't have to be in LA to see it. Explain that to people. Please.
Yeah, if you just type LA progressive in your URL.
All right. That's
just
easy.
Just type
enough.
LA progressive and that's it. Steve
that's
is trying
it.
To get it.
Jim?
Yes, Steve.
I just want to add 2 points here. If anyone who is watching this has just had kind of a chill because of these concerns about watching Collateral Murder or going on YouTube to watch the entire 40-minute video, that feeling you are feeling right now that you might be targeted, marked, or denied information, hold on to that feeling. That is the feeling of being censored. And that is exactly what we are talking about in this entire program, that this is information that goes back years. There is no national security concern about watching that video today. And the fact that private actors like YouTube or Facebook or other private actors conspire with the government in that kind of suppression of information is an extension of the First Amendment violations we're talking about today.
Steve is absolutely right. And it's that same old tired notion that you can't know something your government is doing because it would be not in our national security to know that. And think about those tens of thousands of documents that WikiLeaks, and Steve, I think you talked about that earlier, were released showing war crime after war crime after war crime in the Middle East and our wars there. That's something certainly the American people are entitled to know. That was settled during Daniel Ellsberg's time in his case. But that's right. It's just an effort to censor what you know, to keep you stupid, to keep them allowing to do whatever they want to do with your tax dollars. And it's none of your business. You're just a citizen or a resident of this country. And we should all be greatly alarmed by that. I'm very thankful to the whistleblowers and to people like Julian Assange who aren't frightened off by that and the government's efforts to do that. Anyone else want to get in on this? Yes.
I do want to talk about little bit about net neutrality, because as we talk about this new world of sharing information, we need to understand that there's a shift in power. So let's say that, we were able to get information out. All Google or any of the social media moguls, YouTube is now owned by Google? The bigger these organizations get, the more control they have, and they can just take down your video. They can, if someone searches for you, you can show up on page 10,000 of that search and no one is going to find your information. So we need to mount a campaign to learn more about how to reduce the power of these social media moguls. Because they're partnering with government.
Yeah. Well, Nathan, unless I'm wrong, I'm looking at all the many, many questions. I must say a lot of them were the same questions. People had the same questions and we've answered those. Also, a number of people wrote in under the Q&A simply saying that we needed to turn the volume up or they weren't seeing the picture. Would we start it over again? And we did do that. We thank you for keeping us on our toes in that regard. Many people just sent in saying thank you for, they didn't know as much about this as they had wanted to know, that this was one of the most informative. We've had all sorts of very complimentary, and I won't read all of those, please. I just was struck by one, Corrine Henry. Thanks for all this information. I'm a mother of 5 children. I just can't imagine a world without WikiLeaks. And that goes to the point that Steve and so many of you have been making today. I think that concludes it for us. Nathan, I'm missing something. I don't see any. Yes, Robert, I'm sorry. Is there something you wanted to say?
Oh, yeah, I just want to add about the video issues. Once we have a true platform up and running, website and so forth, we'll have everything there available, better organized and all that, I'm sure, at some point in the very near future. So apologies to people who hung in there and watched through some of those technical issues, but they'll be ironed out eventually here.
Oh, I've been on a number of these and we did pretty well. And I thank everybody for that. I want to thank all of you, all of our panelists today, and all of the really large number of people who signed on to be part of this webinar on freedom of the press and Julian Assange and the imprisonment of so many in this time of the COVID-19 pandemic. If I may just close by saying, we're hoping, our purpose in this was to educate, yes, to agitate and to really urge you to keep fighting for that freedom of press. Julian Assange is perhaps the poster child for it now, but there are many, many examples of attacks on the press that we all have to keep fighting for as we keep fighting for Julian Assange's freedom. And of course, the removal of all of our brothers and sisters in jails and prisons here and all over the world now must be removed from conditions which are toxic and threatening to take their lives. We thank all of you again for joining us. We urge you to stay active and to keep fighting for these good causes. And thanks. We'll see you again in the near future.
Great. I just stopped the recording. So that was fantastic. Yeah, thank you. People are still in this Zoom meeting. So I'll go ahead and close that down now. But thank you all. Yes.
Do you have a count of how many watched on Zoom and on YouTube?
Not a live count. Let me get you figures afterward. But
Steve, I saw at least 100 people that had joined as participants down in the participants category. And yes, with the exception of about 5 or 6 of them, they stuck through to the end.
Right, I saw that number too. Afterwards, for our own purposes, if you can get a reliable count overall, Nathan, that would be very helpful.
Sure.